Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and I'm not really here. Don't worry, we still have a show, and a pretty great one, too. The hugely successful British band Arctic Monkeys will do a stripped-down set of their new songs here in the studio. We've got a look at Neil Young's much-ballyhooed high-end music system, and we begin a two-part series on music and sports. But as you listen to this, I am upstate in Saratoga Springs, probably still counting all the money I've won during my first day at the racetrack. Although it is also possible that I'm now crying into my 17th beer. You never know how a day at the track is going to go, but I do make sure to keep the fridge stocked with beer. Anyway, I'm upstate with my family and my brother's family and a few friends, and they're all in the next room playing some knowledge or word-based board game. I'm not allowed to play because my wife says I'm a know-it-all and no fun to play with. Well, I know that I am not a know-it-all, and I have proof. Remember last week when we did a piece on Salon.com's list of the 15 most hated bands of the last 30 years? Nickelback is on that list, and I said this. This is how you remind me of what I really am. The 2012 Super Bowl, you remember Nickelback was the intermission, the halftime entertainment, and there was a recall petition. Even as I was saying that, some part of my brain was going, what? Nickelback? Was it the Super Bowl? That doesn't sound right. But we were rushing through stuff, and I didn't give it another thought. Well, this is how you remind me of what I really am. An idiot.
Hello, my name is Steve from Hamtramck, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit. And I have to give you a little bit of correction there. Nickelback, who deserved to be on the 15 most hated bands. Actually, they performed at the Thanksgiving Day show a couple of years ago, not the Super Bowl. Incidentally, it was on the same exact weekend they played the halftime show of the Grey Cup, which is the Canadian Football League equivalent to the Super Bowl.
Yes, thank you, Steve. I'm well aware of what the Grey Cup is, being a know-it-all and stuff. Ugh. You know, I clearly remember doing the segment on that Nickelback recall petition, and it was obviously a game the whole country would be watching, but it wasn't the Super Bowl, it was the annual Thanksgiving Day game in Detroit, as Steve points out. All right, you know what? I'm going to give you the number for our listener line, because Mr. Mouth is always faster than Mr. Brain, and I bet if you listen carefully, you will find lots of other comic mistakes that you can correct. Our number is 866-939-1612. Now, if you'll excuse me, I've got family and friends playing Boggle in the next room, and I suddenly feel like crushing them. Here's tonight's first segment. Now it's 3 in the morning, and I'm trying to change your mind. Left you multiple missed calls, and to my message you replied. Why'd you only call me when you're high? This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. When the Arctic Monkeys emerged in 2006, they did more than just turn heads. The English rock band's first album, Whatever People Say I Am, That's What I'm Not, was the fastest-selling debut record in British history. Their new album, AM, is full of layered, energetic, witty, electro-rock songs. But today, we're going to hear the band going back to basics in a stripped-down acoustic duo. Alex Turner and Matt Helders of Arctic Monkeys are here live in the Soundcheck studio to play their new song, Do I Wanna Know?
One, two, three, four. Have you got color in your cheeks? Did you ever get that fear that you can't shift the tide that sticks around like summits in your teeth? Are there some aces up your sleeve? Have you no idea that you're in deep? I dreamt about you nearly every night this week. How many secrets can you keep? 'Cause there's this tune I found that makes me think of you somehow, and I play it on repeat until I fall asleep, spilling drinks on my settee. Do I wanna know if this feeling flows both ways? Sad to see you go. Was sort of hoping that you'd stay. Baby, we both know that the nights were mainly made for saying things that you can't say tomorrow day. Crawling back to you, ever thought of calling when you've had a few? 'Cause I always do. Or maybe I'm too busy being yours to fall for somebody new. Now I thought it through, crawling back to you. So have you got the good? Been wondering if your heart's still open, and if so, I wanna know what time it should. Simmer down and poker up. I'm sorry to interrupt, it's just I'm constantly on the cusp. I've tried to kiss you, well, I don't know if you feel the same as I do. But we could be together if you wanted to. Do I wanna know if this feeling flows both ways? Sad to see you go. Was sorta hoping that you'd stayed. Baby, we both know that the nights were mainly made for saying things that you can't say tomorrow day. Crawling back to you, ever thought of calling when you've had a few? 'Cause I always do, so always do. Maybe I'm too busy being yours to fall for somebody new. Now I thought it through, crawling back to you. If this feeling flows both ways, was sort of hoping that you'd stay. Or that the nights were mainly made for saying things that you can't say tomorrow day. Do I wanna know? Too busy being yours to fall. Ever thought of calling, darling? Do you want me crawling back to you?
Arctic Monkeys, live on Soundcheck. Alex Turner, lead vocals, acoustic guitar. Matt Helders playing percussion and backing vocals. And wow, Do I Want to Know? That sounds quite different, Alex, from the version that's on the new record.
It does, John.
When you're writing the songs, is this, you know, if you're in the back of the bus just working stuff out, is this what it sounds like? Guy with guitar and somebody with maracas or tambourine?
No.
The maracas rarely come on the road, I'm afraid, John.
Yeah, the maracas are a new addition, actually.
Can I just say, the maracas are looking quite patriotic over there.
Right.
Red, white, and blue with stars and stripes.
Yeah, maybe you can help us out with this. That's what we thought. The guy who sold them in all said...
Said the same thing. But then we've had somebody throwing Puerto Rican into there.
Oh, I see. It's a single star, so that is the Puerto Rican flag, yes.
Yeah, so maybe that's... I mean, but yeah, the guy said to me when I purchased him, he's like, oh, very... patriotic of you.
Selling him, he's got a certain responsibility to know what he's selling.
Right. Yeah.
So, well, all right. So maybe he thought you guys were from Puerto Rico.
Maybe, yeah. I don't know. But
it's patriotic for somebody.
Exactly. Yeah, we couldn't find any Union Jack ones. I mean, I guess they'd be Union Majackers, wouldn't they?
So the song's called Do I Want to Know, which, you know, it has that lyric about calling when I've had a few. Not the first or only time in an Arctic Monkeys song that behavior under the influence has been a subject.
You've got to address it.
That sort of is the theme. It's always kind of comes back to the same thing. It's just like a different director each time, maybe. But Yeah, I don't know. I can't really write about the mountain yet.
You're not quite up to the...
I'm not ready for that. Yeah,
yeah, all right. The album title, AM, I mean, people can interpret this in a lot of different ways. AM radio, AM, you know, just a statement of being.
Yeah.
Does it just stand for Arctic Monkeys?
Yeah.
So this is your Velvet Underground VU thing.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So there's no talking point there. Sorry. I don't know. I like the look of the letters, though, John, you know, the peaks and troughs and the AM and AM. That reflects
It's very mountainous, actually, if you think about it.
Maybe,
there you go. Are you guys fans of older... I mean, are you Velvet Underground fans?
Yeah. What's not to like? Yeah.
Really?
Definitely, yeah.
Elsewhere on the record, there's a song called, I think it's I Want It All, where you actually name check not just the Rolling Stones, but a specific and a pretty old...
Yeah, a bit of a deep cut.
Yeah, 2,000 Light Years from Home.
Yeah, you like that, John?
I do. I also sort of appreciate reading in one of the articles or interviews somewhere that you, Alex, were having some stereo problems and were using an old David Bowie record to work it out. Aladdin Sane?
Right, yeah. No.
Was that when you had your hum?
I was having mystery a terrible hum. Mystery hum. And I could not figure out where it was coming from. It took me, like, forever to find it out. But I heard, like, Time... Like, cause no, that's the last tune on there.
No, Time is the first song on the
on
second side.
On the second side, is it? Yeah. Right. Yeah, Time is Waiting in the Wings was like, it's just, too much. It reminds me of that home now, sadly.
So I guess my question is, why, if you're having a problem with your stereo system, would you obsessively repeat the same song over and over as a way to...
Because it was I only had one side working as well. It was like, oh, I don't know. So I was trying to get the other side going.
Oh, you mean
one side of
right?
the record? Or
no, one side of the...
Say, like your melted
you know,
one
left
side.
And right, one side of the... stereo image.
No.
The field.
We're speaking with Alex Turner and Matt Helders, half of Arctic Monkeys. Where's the other half of the band?
Who cares, John?
Ah, it's going to be one of those interviews, is it?
Don't worry about them.
Now, have you all moved to L.A.?
We've been spending a lot of time there, yeah. Mm-hmm. All four as a team. First time we've lived in the same town for about 10 years.
And what has that done, if anything, to the sound of the new record? I mean, is this in some way your L.A. record?
People are saying that, yeah. I mean, I guess it's the third in, like, our L.A. trilogy, in a way, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's with Return of the Jedi.
But yeah, we'll have a good L.A. box set.
Yeah, but...
It might look like it says La Box Set.
Maybe we spent a lot more time driving, as you do in L.A., and there's something about this record that I think sounds good in the car.
Hmm.
So maybe that's an L.A. influence.
Right.
There's the
idea of, you know, car music, of, you know, having that kind of steady rhythm and stuff. I mean, we've come to expect that from Arctic Monkeys. What we don't necessarily expect is a song called Number One Party Anthem that turns out to be like this really slow, kind of mournful ballad. Are you kind of playing with expectations at various points with this record?
I think so, John. I think you've got to. Yeah, I mean, however, it would have been like more surprising if they'd have put Number One Party Anthem on and it would have been like, sound like David Guetta or something.
Yeah, I was gonna say,
like, that's where we should have gone, like double bluffed
tune.
On him.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
It seemed, just because that's the way it feels sometimes, like when you're in the situations that song describes, it's kind of got that slow pace to it, and he's sort of wandering around a room full of strangers acting like friends.
Well, folks will be able to hear that and all the rest of the new songs on the album AM when it comes out on September 10th, Arctic Monkeys with their latest record, and we're hearing kind of stripped-down versions of it here in the studio. You want to do Mad Sounds next?
Yeah.
All right.
That sounds good. Let's give that a shot.
Alex Turner, Matt Helders from Arctic Monkeys, live on Soundcheck.
Mad sounds in your ears make you feel all right. they bring you back to life. Mad sounds in your ears, they make you get up and dance, they make you get up. Yeah, they make you get up. Love buckles under the strain of those wild nights. Run, but you cannot hide. Mad sounds in your ears, they make you get up and dance, they make you get up all night long. They reappear, they make you get up and dance. Yeah, they make you get up. Suppose you gotta do what you gotta do. We just weren't feeling how we wanted to. You sit and try sometimes, but you just can't figure out what went wrong. Then out of nowhere, somebody comes and hits you with an ooh la la la, ooh la la la, ooh la la la, ooh, ooh la la la, ooh la la la, ooh la la la, ooh. You got those mad sounds in your ears, they make you get up and dance. Mad sounds in your ears, they make you get up and dance.
It's called Mad Sounds. You'll find it on the new Arctic Monkeys record when it comes out on September 10th, the album called AM, but that's a live acoustic version from Alex Turner and Matt Helders on guitar and percussion, respectively, live here in the Soundcheck studio. Do you guys want to play something from the previous record, from Suck It and See?
Yeah, let's do Suck It and See, yeah.
All right.
Here we go, Suck It and See, then. Your love is like a studded leather headlock. Your kiss, it could put creases in the rain. You're rarer than a can of dandelion butter. And those other girls are just post-mix lemonade. Suck it and see, you never know. Sit next to me before I go. The jigsaw women with horror movie shoes. Be cruel to me, 'cause I'm a fool for you. I poured my aching heart into a pop song. I couldn't get the hang of poetry. Oh, that's not a skirt, girl, that's a sawn-off shotgun. And I can only hope you got it aimed at me. Suck it and see, you never know. Sit next to me before I go. Jigsaw women with horror movie shoes. Be cruel to me, 'cause I'm a fool for you.
Shangri-La. How I often wonder where you are. You have got that face that just says, baby, I was made to break your heart. Oh, suck it and see you never know. Sit next to me before I go, 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 go. Cause I'm a fool for you.
That's the title track from the last Arctic Monkeys record, Suck It and See, live version from Alex Turner, vocals and guitar, Matt Helder's percussion and vocals. And do you guys do this a lot?
This is the first time I've ever been involved in an acoustic session.
Yeah.
I mean, this
didn't
week
do
has
well,
been the first
John.
Time.
You did
this
really...
This is exclusive. It, this know, is a Helder's exclusive right here. For you, John.
It's not just that the songs sound really good this way. It's how differently good they sound. Oh. You know what I'm saying? I mean, when you get into the studio, does what comes out often surprise you, having Alex written the song?
This time, I think a lot more, yeah, because there's a lot more going on. It's much more of a studio record this time. And the songs weren't written on acoustic guitar or sitting at a piano. You know, a lot of time it came from like a, you know, a drum and a rhythm.
A
like
riff a, or
yeah,
something, yeah.
Like a groove from the bass and drums that we recorded on this little cassette four-track recorder, and I kind of wrote melodies and lyrics along to that. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of interesting now to... you know, dress them up like this and do it with like just some maracas and an akue.
Yeah. Well, Suck It and See sounded like the song the Everly Brothers would never have written, but might have wanted to.
Yeah.
Funny how that, you know, what happens to a song when you dress it differently.
Yeah. But I don't think the ones in the last album, you know, are a little more equipped to perform like this, yeah. Because they were, on the other end, like written just like singer-songwritery, if you like.
All right. You know. I have a question for you from our listener, Guy, who posts this. What was the weirdest thing that happened when making AM?
Mm. Oh, Guy.
Guy.
You guys made this. Were you at Joshua Tree when you made this?
We started off in Rancho de la Luna, yeah, in Joshua Tree, which has become kind of one of our favorite places on the planet, John.
Yep.
But we saw it as more of a writing exercise this time. We did record some stuff.
Something weird did happen
there.
Go on,
tell me what happened weird.
Well, he had like, we didn't know, but the guy, Dave, who like owns the studio and house lives in the house, had a snake skin hung on his wall, like a shed snake skin. But we didn't realise, and it fell off while we were recording and was on the floor. And earlier on, we'd seen a snake outside and we're like all a bit English and freaked out about it.
Yeah.
So then later on, we saw this shed skin on the floor and we were like, oh no.
It's like, yeah, like the snake's
in the house and it's just shed its skin, so it's feeling fresh. And it took us ages to work out that it was just the one that he'd had like pinned up on his wall and it fell off due to bass vibrations,
yeah.
I imagine.
So it was just a coincidence.
There you are,
these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane. Are you familiar with snakes on a plane?
Yes,
John?
I am.
There's a TV version, and he's got a quote right when he's on the plane, and he says the MF word, right? But they clean it up for TV, and it's got a good clip if you can dig it out. And he goes, I'm tired of these monkey fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane.
Well, that's the overdub.
They overdubbed that for the telly, yeah.
That's great.
It's good. Check that out on YouTube, kids.
Is it at least the same voice, or is it like really obviously some playback voice?
Yeah, because like I think you saw the, you know, for when they put it on in daytime on like whatever
network.
But
sometimes it's an afterthought, though, isn't it? And like they'll just get a guy to go and do it.
Exactly.
Not the actual actor.
I think now they got Sam.
Big Sam did it, didn't
I? I think Big Sam did it, yeah.
Enough is enough! I have had it with these monkey-fighting snakes on this Monday to Friday plane! Everybody strap in! I'm about to open some freaking windows.
All right, so snakes on a plane. Is that big at the back of the bus when the monkeys are on tour?
I've never seen it, actually. I've only seen that.
That clip.
That edit.
All right. Speaking of watching things, the single Why Do You Only Call Me When You're High has you, Alex, in a not suitable for workplace video.
Oh, yeah.
What was the inspiration? We're going to hear a little bit of the song to wrap up. What was the inspiration for this?
For the song or the video?
The song.
Yeah.
Well, I know what the inspiration for the video is.
Yeah, right. Well, it's kind of like all the same thing. It's just, it could have kind of been lyrically the song on like the first record, maybe that, like when I was really going in for all that. Get a little bit over-oiled and start thinking you're Iron Man or something, and you're sending text messages out left, right, and center.
There's usually a bit of drinking involved prior to the sending of the text messages.
Of course,
messages.
That's what I meant by over-oiled.
All right. Alex Turner, Matt Helders from Arctic Monkeys. The album's called AM. It comes out on September 10th. It's been a lot of fun having you guys playing some of these songs for
us
here today.
Thanks very much. Great time with John, actually. Yeah, this is
You sound surprised. You sound absolutely surprised to have had a good time.
No, no, John. So the moment you walked through that door, mate, I thought, this is where I need to be.
A ray of light.
The song's called Why Do You Only Call Me When You're High from Arctic Monkeys. Now it's 3 in the morning and I'm trying to change your mind. Up next, something's cooking in the Soundcheck Test Kitchen. Executive producer Joel Meyer joins us with a podcast about sports and music called Players on Players. This is Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and normally this would be the part of the show where I talk with a music critic or maybe the author of a book that kind of turned my head around, but not today. Today, our executive producer, Joel Meyer, has submitted a request for airtime, and I have granted said request. Welcome, Joel.
Thank you, John, for accepting the request.
All right, what do you want?
Okay, well, I want to play for you some excerpts from something that we cooked up in the Soundcheck Test Kitchen, all right? Earlier this summer, we made good on an idea that I've had for a long time. I don't know if you've noticed, John, but on my desk, there's a Post-it note that's been there for like 2 years that just says Players on Players. And it came from this thing that happens in the studio after the show's over, John. You always end up talking about sports with musicians when the mics are off.
I do tend to do that. Sometimes I do that when the mics are on, too.
But it goes on for a long time, and you really see musicians start to relax when they're not talking about their new album or their new tour. And it occurred to me, well, the same thing probably happens with athletes, too. Maybe the last thing that athletes want to talk about is sports, and if you ask them about music, they'll probably open up. So here was the genius idea, John. I thought that Players on Players should be like a podcast where we put a musician and an athlete in this Soundcheck studio and make them have a conversation and just see what happens.
All right. So who are your guinea pigs for
this? Okay. So naturally, for the first person, I went to someone that I knew wouldn't think the idea was too crazy. If no. Erin McKeown is a singer-songwriter who should be really familiar to people out there in the Soundcheck audience. She's been a performer here in this studio several times. She's guest-hosted the show a couple of times recently. And also, she's been blogging about sports for us on soundcheck.org. So Erin is one half of the conversation that you're about to hear. The other person is a really interesting guy named Wade Davis, who was a cornerback, a defensive end in the NFL in the early part of the 2000s. He mentored centers LGBT youth at a place called the Hetrick Martin Institute at NYU. And he's probably best known now for coming out of the closet in 2012. Now, you probably remember earlier this year a lot of news about Jason Collins right. from the NBA, you know, the first active player in one of the major American sports to come out.
All right. So Wade Davis, Aaron McKeown. You got your musician, you got your athlete. What'd you do?
So I gave them a little bit of background information about each other. They don't know each other really at all. I gave Wade a copy of Aaron's latest album, Manifestra, and I asked Aaron if she would bring her guitar to the studio for the taping. So we're going to play just excerpts. There's mm-hmm. a full mm-hmm. podcast that you can hear on soundcheck.org, and we're going to want you to weigh in with your feedback, too. You can leave a comment there on soundcheck.org. You can email us. But let's kick off. This is how it all started. This is Aaron McKeown and Wade Davis on Players on Players.
We're both Southerners, wow. But I've lost my accent.
Mine comes back when I talk to people who really have one. it really comes back. And it's funny because my parents grew up, both immigrant families, working class in the Northeast.
Okay.
And they moved to this little town in Virginia. And they were always the Yankees.
We used to use that word a lot when I was a kid.
They always were, and they were never. They were always on the outside of the sort of social scene of mm-hmm. this town. And it was funny. So they don't have accents at all, but I have a slight one. And you know, as a recording artist, you know, I have this like privilege of like going back and listening to like what I sounded like in high school, you know. And so I have tapes of myself like on a radio show or singing or. Man, it was so much deeper than it is now.
Can you give me a sample of how it sounded?
Well, first of all, it was like way slower. So I'd be like, "My name's Aaron. I'm gonna play you a song that I wrote." So really, you know. So like then I went to school in the Northeast and have lived in the Northeast since, and so things have sped up for me.
I was the same way. As a kid, I had a speech impediment, so it was something that I was afraid to talk often. And then when I moved to Colorado, people were like, he stutters and he's got this Southern accent. Boy, he's ignorant, you know. Yeah. And I could not say my STRs to save my life. I mean, I couldn't say street, straight, or strawberry. It was like, go on, scrape down that street and get me some strawberries, you know. And I couldn't say oil. It was motor oil or mm-hmm. urns, you know. So I literally taught myself how not to talk with a Southern accent because I felt so much shame behind that. So I was like, wow, I've got to learn how to speak the King's English or something. So it was definitely, so I definitely understand. Yeah,
I had middle school teachers who, my name was Arn. You know? So I understand some of that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. You mentioned that you played a sport when you were younger. What sport was that?
I played a lot of sports okay. when I was growing up. I have to say that where I grew up in a small town in Virginia, and where I grew up, what sports you played depended on what color you were. I'll be totally honest, and like that's just my experience growing up, and I like deeply regret like missing out on like some sports that I loved because most of the people I was friends with were white, and like. You didn't play softball if you were white.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say softball or soccer.
No. No, my school didn't have soccer. It was too small. No, I grew up on the swim team.
Okay.
And playing tennis okay. and playing field hockey.
Well, my partner's going to love you. He is a huge tennis fan. I mean, obsessive tennis fan.
Yeah, no, it was, and it was interesting to me because swimming is an individual sport and tennis is an individual mm-hmm. sport, but field hockey was a team sport. And I always had... I always had trouble with the team sports.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. It was interesting to me because I never liked to be yelled at by a coach. It was always a problem for me. I was a link, which is sort of a midfield position where basically you just run the whole time and you okay. kind of make trouble, which is like perfect for my personality.
Just make trouble.
You're the bridge between the offense and the defense, and you just run basically all the time.
So you're a troublemaker, though.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. And but you know, my coach would want me to run faster, and she would start yelling at me, and I would run slower. Like the minute like somebody started yelling at me,
such a rebel.
I would run slower, and you know, like in tennis and swimming, it's not it wasn't as much like that. But, you know, I'm an adult now. I play on a softball team. And I had a conversation with, like, we have a coach, you know, who's just another friend who's the same age as me. But I was like, yo, you can't yell at me. Like, this is adult rec league softball.
Well,
like,
maybe
you can't
it's a
yell
good
at me.
Thing you didn't play basketball and all those other sports because,
well,
yeah.
I'm sure that as an athlete, like, I am sure you got yelled at.
Oh, my God. I'm a coach now, and I yell at my guys, and I'm so awful. I feel awful. But yeah.
Do you?
Yeah, I play in the New York Gay Flag Football League as well, and we have a national team that I'm the captain of, and we've won 4 out of the last 6 championships, which is a privilege, but it's also something that I'm like really proud of. I'm excited about, so I'm hard on my guys, you know. I'm like, but also I have to realize that I know the game of football in ways that they can never know, so I have to be conscious of that. But sometimes I go like, how do you make that mistake? You know, I just don't get it. But when I was a kid, you played 2 sports. Football and you ran track, or you raced in the street, because I grew up in a very rural part of Louisiana, and I grew up poor would be putting it nicely, but that's all that you had, because all of the fields were dirt, so you couldn't play basketball. Like, we tried to, but there'd be so much dirt in your mouth and your face, you'd be like, I can't shoot a ball. But sports in a lot of ways were a savior to me, because even when I started to understand my sexuality and I really ran from it, you know, in so many ways, I was able to hide in sports, you know, because I was, even though I wasn't the best, I was good enough and I was kind of popular, so I could hide, you know, with my football friends or hide in the weight room and never have to really face the realities that I was a gay male.
So that is Wade Davis, former player in the NFL's Europe League, retired, came out of the closet in 2012, and Aaron McKeown, the musician and occasional guest host of Soundcheck. So, Joel Meyer, this is part of this Players on Players experiment that you did over the summer.
That's right. So that's something you can listen to in the full podcast. One thing I wanted to play for you, John, is that it was really clear that this pairing of a musician and an athlete was a good excuse for each participant to ask a question of the other that they would never have an opportunity to ask. So, for example, here's Aaron, a musician, asking Wade, an athlete, something that she's always wanted to know.
Okay, so when I picture athletes like getting ready for a game, you know, and you see like SportsCenter, you see like LeBron James like walking into the arena and stuff, he's always got headphones on, and you and then you always hear about like what music is on in a locker room and like who gets to pick the tunes and all that stuff. Like, I'm curious, like, on game day, like, where's music fit in for you?
So you asked a bunch of great questions. So it depends on the team. So when I was in Tennessee, Jeff Fisher, he basically picked the music. So it was...
What did Jeff Fisher pick?
He picked, how do I just describe this? Like, Dave Matthews type music, you know, that was, I would say, middle of the road, you know, not too hard and not too soft. When I was in Seattle, there was no music, you know, because Mike Holmgren was a tyrant of a man, you know, he was not letting anything happen. And then in Washington, I think there was a hip-hop plan, because Steve Spurrier was a nice man, a great brilliant mind, but the players ran that team. But most players, when they walk in, you're trying to zone out everything else and you're really trying to kind of focus in on the actual game itself. So I actually used to listen to gospel music about 2 hours before the game, just to kind of relax myself, because I didn't want to kind of get too excited like 2 hours before the game. And then I would make sure I stretched to, this is going to sound awful, Whitney Houston music typically. Like, I'm a Whitney Houston fan, or like something that was like very R&B soul music. And then probably 45 minutes before the game, it was a playlist of some of the hardest, trash talking this music you could ever imagine. From T.I. to Jay-Z, you know, to Tupac, because I needed to have that little anger edge about it, because I'm not a naturally angry guy, so I needed something to kind of get me to hate my opponent, and typically it was hip-hop music, you know.
Which is funny because I don't think that a musician can walk on stage that angry and have a good show.
Even if it's like heavy metal music, where the perception is that they're like, ah, welcome to the jungle, you know?
No, I would say no, and I'm not really a heavy metal musician, but I think that if you walk on stage and you are angry at your audience, if you are angry, I mean, no, I've definitely like walked on stage and been like really angry at the drummer. Do you know what I mean? But I have to put that aside, mm-hmm. Because for me, I music is about this. It's about listening more than it is about action.
And feeling.
Yeah, and I find it hard to listen when I'm angry or have that edge. And for me, it's been a gradual process of learning how to put aside things that might make mm-hmm. me angry while they're happening on stage, because for me that blocks the sort of like creative flow, which is I think why I like sports. Do you know what I mean? Because actually playing a sport,
you can get that anger
I can work through that. Yeah, for sure. I mean, my best days are when, especially in the summertime, like I spend all day like working on a piece of music or like trying to wrangle like some attention somehow in the music business, and maybe it doesn't go well, and then I go and play softball at night and just like want to like hit the crap out of the ball like when it's coming at me.
We're talking softball from Maine to San Diego, talking softball, Mattingly and Canseco, Ken Griffey's grotesquely swollen jaw, Steve Sachs and his running with the law. We're talking Homer, Ozzie and the Straw.
Now, wait a minute. I recognize that voice and sort of that song. That's a version of Talkin' Baseball.
Yes, called Talkin' Softball. It's from The Simpsons. There is a really great episode where Mr. Burns hires a bunch of ringers from the major leagues to come play on the nuclear power plant softball team.
Okay.
But they get into a lot of trouble in Springfield.
Okay. So that's Terry Cashman, right?
That's Terry Cashman.
Yeah. So, players on players. Athletes and musicians coming together in the sound check lab over the summer. So Wade Davis, athlete, Aaron McKeown, singer-songwriter. What else? How long did the two of them talk?
They talked for probably about 90 minutes all told. The podcast that you'll hear on the website is not quite that long, but they had a really good time. And there's also a video that you can see on our website, and you can watch what happens when they tried to perform together. And also Wade's first attempt at playing guitar.
Nice.
As well, too. So there was some bridge building that happened right here in the studio, John.
All right. So what else?
Okay, so coming up, I said, John, earlier that Players on Players seems to be an excuse for musicians and athletes to ask each other questions that they've always wanted to ask but have never really had the opportunity to ask. So what Aaron wanted to know is if Wade had ever attempted to be musical.
I really always wanted to be a musician. Like, really, like, this is an awful story, but I remember the first time I knew I was gay, I remember being at my uncle's house in Chicago, and the Bodyguard soundtrack had been out for maybe a couple months. And I was in the shower singing Queen of the Night by Whitney Houston to the top of my lungs. I got the stuff that... And I was like, I sound really good. I was like, no one can tell me I don't sound just like Whitney Houston. And that was the moment I was like, wow, like, I'm gay because I want to sing this song at the top of my lungs about being the queen of the night. and it was so funny because music has always played a role in me being okay with my sexuality. Like the fact that I like to sing Beyonce, or I like to dance to Gaga, you know, or do all these things that the stereotypical straight man won't let himself do. Because there's no one that can tell me that if you hear a certain song, that your body just doesn't I react to it. I have friends that go, oh, I don't dance, you know, I'm a gangster, you know, I don't do type of stuff like that. And I'm like, really? Come on now. But
with the right song.
Exactly, you know, like there's certain beats that your body just reacts to.
Can you think of one of those? Can you think of a song that, like, can you name more songs that just make you have to dance?
If I hear Billie Jean, which is my favorite song of all time, once that bass line comes on, I literally have a reaction to it, you know. So there's certain types of music that you just can't, you just have to move to. So it's interesting that, like, music was really a defining space for me, where I said, you know what, I'm gay, and music is helping me understand that it's okay.
Interesting. Wade Davis and Aaron McKeown, the athlete meeting the musician in the Soundcheck Lab.
If you learn one thing from this Players on Players podcast, it is that Wade Davis is a huge Whitney Houston fan. Whitney Houston has come up twice already in just the excerpts that we're playing on the show tonight.
So the full podcast is online?
That's right. You can go to soundcheck.org and download it there. And, you know, because this is something that came out of the Soundcheck test kitchen, we really want to know what you listeners think. Tell us what you like about it, what you don't like about it. And also, if you have a good idea, we want to steal it. So if you know of a musician that you think would talk really or has a really great take on sports, we want to know about that. Or if you can think of an athlete that has a secret musical career or secret musical knowledge, we want to know about that as well, too. So you can post your comment on soundcheck.org. You can email us at soundcheck@wnyc.org, or you can leave us a message at 866-939-1612.
All right. Joel Meyer, executive producer of Soundcheck, overseeing our experiment called Players on Players, and we'll have another one tomorrow?
That's right. So we're going to hear Aaron McKeown talking this time with Dominique Foxworth. He played for 7 seasons in the NFL with the Baltimore Ravens, and now he's the head of the NFL Players Association, the union for football players. And get this, John, he is enrolled at Harvard Business School for the fall.
All right. Well, that's tomorrow on Soundcheck. Joel, thanks. Coming up next, Elliot Van Buskirk of Evolver.fm gives us an update on the status of Pono, the high-quality audio system that Neil Young has been developing for so many years. This is Soundcheck.
I want to live. I want to kill. I've been a miner for a heart of gold.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Singer-songwriter Neil Young released an autobiography last fall called Waging Heavy Peace. And if you're a fan, you probably read the heck out of it, because there's a lot in there. The notoriously prickly musician's childhood, his early years in music, behind-the-scenes stuff from his famous tours of the 70s. But Neil Young also wrote about several modern-day passions, including his longtime quest to develop a super high-quality audio system called Pono. Elliot Van Buskirk of the digital music site Evolver.fm recently wrote about Pono and the uphill battle that it's facing. He joins me on the line. Hi, Elliot.
Hi, John. How's it going?
Good. So, in a nutshell, what is Pono?
Pono is, so Neil Young was walking behind some woman who was listening to we believe, an iPod. It had those white telltale earbuds. And apparently he had this revelation that, you know, despite all of this talk about how people are listening to vinyl these days, most people's listening experience is fairly low fidelity. And we've gained, you know, so much as music fans with the ability to download and stream music and take it around with us, sound quality is the one thing that seems not to have improved. And this is his passion with Pono, to try to fix this, which is going to take some doing.
Right. Now, it sounds like, you know, a great idea. Music should sound better. And yet this has been the subject of some controversy. What would the other side of this debate be?
The other side of the debate is that if you have a very, you know, a well-encoded MP3 or, you know, anything from the major music services, it's going to sound pretty good. And for most people, the best way to get better sound quality is the same thing that it's always been, which is better headphones or better speakers. I mean, that's the biggest upgrade anyone can make. And so I guess part of this is that we have seen some nicer headphones catching on these days. People seem to be over the, you know, trying to show off with that white earbuds.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Beats Electronics, Beats by Dre, whatever you call it, they have, you know, shown what a lot of people said wasn't true to be true, which is that people will pay for good headphones. And so now the question is, well, will they pay for higher quality sound files? And, you know, one indication that they might is that a lot of people do seem to appreciate the sound of vinyl these days. And when you go to a higher resolution digital file, the argument is that you're getting closer to that great analog sound.
All right. So after reading your article at Evolver.fm, I'm a little skeptical that Neil Young's Pono could ever really take off and really challenge iTunes, for example. And you write that it has two major obstacles to overcome. Let's talk about number one first. Where will the music come from?
This is a huge challenge. You know, I started writing about this topic ages ago, and I talked to recording engineers, and they said, well, you know, we usually keep a 24-bit master, and we don't need to get into what that means, but it's higher resolution, you know, like mm-hmm. a higher resolution mm-hmm. photograph or something. Because when they add their effects and their reverb and they do all their mixing magic, it helps to do that at a higher resolution. So they apparently have those masters sitting around in a lot of cases. On the other hand, if you're trying to launch a music store these days, you need to have, I don't know, 15 million songs at least in order to be taken seriously. And that's 15 million, you know, or, you know, at least 5 million recording engineers that have to dig up these files. And that just doesn't scale. And then in some cases, you know, everything before 1985 when the CD came out, and that's a lot of very popular music that people still listen to.
Mm-hmm.
In that case, you have to go dig out the master tapes from some locker somewhere and spend a whole bunch of money and a whole day, pretty much, per album to convert those. Luckily for Neil Young, a lot of work has been done in the previously failed high-resolution music formats, DVD audio and Super Audio CD, and there's a company called HD Tracks that does high-res files too. So that's probably, you know, a few thousand of the most popular albums have already been done mm-hmm. to that extent. So that's one place these will come from. But as you can tell, this is tough,
right.
Tough work.
All right, so that's an obstacle, but perhaps not an insurmountable one, since, as you say, there have been abortive attempts at doing this in the past. Obstacle two, which seems simpler, also upon reading your article becomes the more thorny issue, which is how, assuming he gets enough material to put Pono into effect and, you know, give us these high quality audio files, how will people play them?
This is potentially a huge issue. The only way to play the Pono files with this great sound quality is going to be to use the device that Pono itself will sell. So they're going to have to create an entire ecosystem, a store and a player, and it's going to be, you know, not your iPhone, not your Android. And this is, you know, if there's one huge trend happening these last few years, it's that, you know, people don't carry around a dedicated audio player anymore. They use these great multifunctional devices that we have. And so for the foreseeable future, you're going to have to go buy this little, you know, the prototypes are yellow, but like an actual MP3 player again, just like we used to, you know, 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for the casual music fan, that's a big investment when, you know, trying a new music service typically these days involves downloading a free app. Now you have to go back to spending, I don't know, at least $100, maybe $200 on this Pono device. And then for the extreme audiophiles, and, you know, I classify audiophiles as people who care about, you know, how much oxygen is in their copper cable from one stereo component to the next. I mean, people who condition their power as it comes out of the wall
mm-hmm.
and goes into their amplifier, they're not going to want to switch to only using this. So, you know, they've sort of eliminated the very high end and the lower end of the market for this thing. And so the question is, how many people care a lot about sound quality, enough to buy something, you know, but not enough to go extremely serious and buy their own DA converters and stuff that would also obviate the need for Poto. So huge challenges for this thing, trying to find the music, trying to make it sound good, and then, you know, hoping that people will buy this player. Now, I did hear from one source that Neil Young and Pono might license this. And if we see, you know, a very nice Android phone, or dare I say even an iPhone, that has this Pono decoder and special technology built into it, you know, I'd give that better chances.
Yeah. We're speaking with Elliot Van Buskirk, founder and editor of Evolver.fm. You mentioned there is a kind of prototype Pono device. Neil Young brought that on the set of The Late Show with David Letterman, right? That was the yellow thing, the little sort of iPhone-shaped box. The iPhone, the iPod, these were objects of desire. Is there any chance that a Pono player or a Pono app could become a similar object of desire?
Well, if it becomes that kind of status thing, you know, where in the beginning with the iPod, you know, those white earbuds, people are like, oh, that's somebody who's clued in. And now with the Beats headphones has that red cable that signifies like, yep, I know what's up with headphones. If it can somehow tap into that whole phenomenon, then it could work. But again, you know, for most people, the music we have today sounds great, and you just buy better headphones, and that solves a lot of the problem for most people.
All right, well, Pono from Neil Young and friends has been in the works for a while. They'd originally targeted this year as the year to unveil it, but it seems likely it'll be still a work in progress for a while longer. Elliot Van Buskirk's article for Evolver.fm talking about the uphill battle that Neil Young and company are facing. You can find the article on our website, soundcheck.org. Elliot, great to speak with you again. Thanks very much.
Thanks so much, Sean. It was a pleasure.
King is gone, but he's not forgotten. This is the story of Johnny Rotten. It's better to burn out than it is.
That's going to do it for Soundcheck today. Tomorrow on the show, Soundgarden bassist Ben Shepherd talks about his new solo album, and the second installment of our sports and music podcast, Players on Players. Plus, acclaimed jazz bassist and major Philadelphia Eagles fan Christian McBride brings his new trio into our studio for a live performance. That does it for tonight's show. Special thanks to Jacob Kramer Duffield, Rebecca Lehrer, and Chris Bannon for their help with our Players on Players podcast. You can hear the full episode at soundcheck.org. I'm John Schaefer.